What's up, everybody? Welcome to Kind of Funny Games Daily. I leaned back and Andrea was just getting set. I was like, how great would it be if I just said something horrible right now in the can? Because Kevin was like, the mics are live. And I leaned back to cough and I was like, what if I just said something terrible?
But you didn't.
I never would. You know what I mean? They're not going to fucking catch me. All right. This is Kind of Funny Games Daily for Thursday, 7/11/2019. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside the busiest lady in the business, Andrea Renee.
What's good, Greg?
You being here 2 days in a row.
I know, right? It's almost like I'm part of the team.
Okay, don't be like that. You're definitely part of the team. Everybody knows that.
Yeah, right, yeah, sure, 100%.
Well, exactly. I finally just got on the Kind of Funny Slack, which is amazing, after being here for over 2 years.
No, I just assume nobody wants it. You know what I mean? Why would you want that? Because you're just going to use it to talk to Joey.
Real talk, the reason why I asked Joey for access to the Slack finally is because I was on the internet yesterday doing some work, and I came across a post that the Taco Bell in Pacifica, yep, this fancy one on the beach, has been remodeled and it's brand new and they're reopening it this weekend.
Cantina.
And it's a cantina. Yeah. And they've got Frozes and Baja Blast. Yeah. And I was like, Joey, we gotta go. And I needed to send her this link so urgently about this Taco Bell that I was like, Joey, add me to the Slack.
See, that's what I enjoy about this is that this news broke on my Slack as well. Not from Kind of Funny, but from Jen talking to Lucy.
Oh.
We share a Slack as well. Horse legs, of course. Where over there they talk about whatever, and this is what was breaking news as well yesterday.
You can't just say horse legs.
Well, Kevin, if you would have come to Tim's 30th birthday roast, you'd understand, or if you watched the video, you'd understand, but you didn't.
Sure, you didn't watch the video, Kevin?
No, why would I want to watch this?
Because we talk about you.
I know, that's exactly why I want to watch
it. He knows he's going to get it. But enough about that. Today we're going to talk about Switch having a CPU update and the fact that a pro ain't coming time soon. There's a Man of Medan update, and there's a new Call of Duty thing. This is what we're going to talk about. Because this is Kind of Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday on a variety of platforms, we run you through the nerdy video game news you need to know about. If you like that, be part of the show, patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. If you are over there, you can give us your questions, comments, concerns, everything else under the video game sun. Then tune in to watch it live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. If you're watching live, you have a special job. Go to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong and tell us what we screw up as we screw it up, so we can set the record straight for everybody watching later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, and listening on podcast services around the globe. Housekeeping for you today. There is a live recording of the PlayStation VR show episode 3 and the Kind of Funny Games cast this afternoon at patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. So you could watch this show, you could watch the next show, which is Internet Explorers, then you could keep watching the VR show, then you can watch the Gamescast, you can spend the entire day with us, and you can also get it later if you want to go over there and support us. Speaking of supporting us, thank you to our Patreon producers, Colton Yoder, Blackjack, and Mohammed Mohammed. Today we're brought to you by Hims, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin the show with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news! 4 items on the Roper Report.
Bakers! Doesn't.
Wow, I like that one. Yeah, I like that you're putting some English on it, as the kids would say.
I don't know what that means. The whole thing was in English, so I don't.
You know what I mean? But like, you're putting like you're making it high. You're making it high, high. You're over there doing high. You know?
I don't know either, Kevin.
4 items on the report.
We already did that.
I want to hear it again. Give me it to me again. Put my English on it again.
I don't know what that means.
Is you're doing it? You're embellishing it.
There we go. That's the word. Embellishment.
Kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. You're welcome to point out that put some English on is a real thing.
I'm not saying it's not a real thing.
Bakers doesn't.
Switch is updating its CPU and its storage. This is Sean Hollister at The Verge. Nintendo just announced a smaller, cheaper version of the Switch today. This is obviously a story from yesterday. But the Switch Lite may not be the only trick up Nintendo's sleeves. The original Nintendo Switch is also getting a new processor and new flash storage chips, according to filings with the Federal Communications Commission, FCC. The new chips could mean fewer slowdowns, faster load times, longer battery life, less heat, or perhaps none of those things. Nintendo submitted what is called a Class 2 permission change to the FCC, effectively a request to tweak an existing gadget without having to get the whole thing recertified for sale in the United States. And there, it vaguely lays out changes. In case you're unaware, SOC, this is obviously going off of the information the little they had there, refers to the Switch system on chip, aka the NVIDIA Tegra processor that contains the CPU and graphics, while, quote, NAND memory is more commonly known as flash storage you find inside a solid-state drive. With the Switch, it would take wouldn't take much of an improvement to make a difference, given how the Switch's four-year-old Tegra X1 processor is barely enough to churn through some of the system's existing titles. But there's no telling until someone gets their hands on the new model and does a comparison. So just an FYI for you.
Yeah.
Exciting? Sure. Worth buying a Switch for? Doubtful.
Probably not.
But hey, that's happening for you.
Mm-hmm.
Andrea, are you going to buy a new Switch for it? Are you excited enough
if
for
a new
Tegra
Switch,
chip?
If I'm buying a new Switch, it's going to be a Switch Lite. I'm not
Do you think you're
going
to buy a Switch Lite?
Yes.
Okay.
Once the right color is released. So I probably won't buy one at launch.
Okay.
Because we know that more colors are going to happen in 2020.
Do we know?
I mean, yes, Greg. Have you seen the history of how Nintendo releases colored stuff?
I have seen it, and they do that quite a bit.
Lots of colors.
Meow.
What is he, dumb?
What? For the record, I thought there'd be way more Joy-Cons. I thought that Joy-Cons would have been a bigger deal for them.
They would have been if they dropped the price. Even if they dropped the price $20, people would buy more.
Even with that, I feel like there's been a ton of different colors.
There's been like six.
I love the ugly. Hey, I love the yellow ones.
Okay, well, now there's the ugly yellow that you both like. Okay?
So here's what I'll do then, Kevin Coelho, if you want to go to video game court. Is what I'm saying is when they launched the Switch and they were like, here's the Joy-Cons, everybody, what do? They ran out, these IGN types, Brian Altano and his cronies, ran out and mocked up, hey, here's what the NES ones would look like, here's what the SNES ones would look like.
And they did
like,
that yesterday with Switch
I'll
Lite.
I'll buy it. Yeah. Those never officially came from Nintendo. You have to go to like Colorware for them. And so, yeah, mm-hmm. The same thing yesterday of like, look at what all these cool Switch lights could be. And it's like, well, yeah, but are we going to get any of those? Where is the official Atomic
Purple?
This is
what Etsy is for, right?
We need the official Atomic Purple Switch Joy-Cons.
I will pre-order that right now, Nintendo, if you make that available. Atomic Purple?
Do you want to sell one? Because there it is.
You wow, right how there. Dare you. Lots of people love Atomic Purple.
I know there's a lot of people, and they would actually do it. I'm just saying. Calm down. Matt Council writes in.
Spicy show today, you
to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. We're still riding the high of yesterday's great show, all right? And says, what's good? With news breaking yesterday about the upcoming release of the Nintendo Switch Lite, many people are talking about buying a second Switch and using it as their travel Switch. It is important to understand that your secondary Switch must be connected to the internet at all times to play any digital games you have purchased. Unless you have a physical cartridge, you cannot play your game on the second Switch without internet. So, you can forget about playing on the train, the car, or the plane. Nintendo needs to change this. Much love. Matt, I need you to sit down. Because here's what I would suggest doing in that very specific scenario. You ready? Make the Switch that can't connect to the TV your primary Switch. And the Switch that will now rest in the dock forever connected to the internet, your primary Switch. Or your secondary
Switch.
Brilliant! Thank you, right? That's the thing.
Did they confirm that the Switch Lite can connect to the dock? I thought that was not
a thing. No, it can't. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying the Switch Lite is the one you make your primary. The one, your Switch you own right now in the dock that's going to sit in the dock for the rest of its life, you make that the secondary. Because it'll always be connected to the internet. Doesn't need to worry about it. You follow me?
No.
He's saying...
Explain it slower.
Okay, sorry. Kevin, I might need a whiteboard. Can I get a big whiteboard out here? Do we have the pens? I see the whiteboard. I don't know. The pen's always the hardest part. You got a pen? All right, cool.
Ladies and gentlemen, cool. If you've never visited youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, maybe you want to go and check this out.
All right. So...
Okay, explain. Break it down for me, Professor Miller.
Pleasure. Thanks for being part of this class. You know what I mean? So here's what we got, all right? This is Mark.
It's such a simple idea.
Can you give me a better pen?
He's drawing a stick figure.
Drawing a stick figure. All right.
Okay, you missed it.
Kevin.
Kevin is now just throwing
interesting show we have
dry
today.
Erase markers at us.
This doesn't hold it up. Hold on. Andrea?
Do you want me to get the pen?
Cover the bases. I got the pen. You just talk.
Okay. So, Greg is now going to pick up... Oh, no. The whiteboard has fallen. All
right.
It's all right. Crisis averted.
Sure.
All right. All right, put my leg there like this. Do
okay.
This is a workout today, all right?
So Greg is now attempting to draw on the whiteboard while holding his microphone and making sure the whiteboard does not fall off of his chair. We need an easel. Can we, like, Amazon Prime now, an easel?
Probably not for two
This
hours
pen sucks, too. Our pens are great. So this is Mark, all right? You see it? You see Mark there?
Yes, I can barely see it. That's okay. If you were left-handed, this would work out much better.
I'm putting there idiot. Mark the idiot, all right?
Okay, Mark the idiot.
So he's saying
is it Mark or Matt?
It says Mark.
Got it.
But his name actually is Matt.
Okay, cool. That's what I thought.
So he has his portable Switch here, Andrea, right?
Okay, I see. So Greg has now drawn a stick figure with the name Matt Marf? Matt,
it's Matt.
In parentheses, it says idiot, and next to him is a very crude drawing of a Switch.
All right.
Okay.
So this is his portable only Switch, right?
Okay.
The Switch Lite.
Switch Lite. Got it.
Hold on. Do this.
Lite. Okay.
All right. And then this is, we're going to call this Prime, all right?
Switch Prime is in the dock.
Right.
Got it.
Now, what he is saying is that since this is his primary Switch.
Right.
His secondary Switch.
Correct.
Cannot go on the road with him and be used in airplane mode or anything like that.
Correct. Because it always needs to be connected to the internet.
And so what I'm saying is, don't be like idiot Matt/Mark.
Okay.
I'm saying go and make your Switch that's docked all the time.
Right.
Your secondary one.
Right.
And make your Switch Lite your primary one.
Right. But what I'm saying is the primary Switch, I don't think that they have confirmed that it can connect to the dock.
No. But at no point does
what
it need
does the
to.
Dock have to do
yeah, I don't understand why you hung
why
up on the dock.
Would, why would it be your
dock? Hold on, oh, we almost have it.
The idea of the primary Switch is that it can connect to your television. So when you're at home, mm-hmm. not on the go, mm-hmm. you can play Switch on your big, nice TV.
Exactly.
But like Switch Lite is not designed to do that. So if you make it your primary Switch, then you're never playing on your television. Is that what you're saying?
No. Because it doesn't. The secondary Switch in the dock can still play to the TV.
Mm-hmm.
So basically,
you're saying the light is irrelevant. You don't
right.
even
I'm
need
saying
it.
Just
no,
switch
you're not
what,
listening.
I'm saying switch what's your primary and what's your secondary. Your dock switch at home mm-hmm. is always going to be connected to the internet. So just make that the secondary one. If one of these things always has to be connected to the internet, make it that one, and then you're fine. Oh, man, Kevin, am I crazy?
You're crazy. No, she's crazy. I don't
okay.
understand how this is so... Andrea.
Wait, so are you insinuating that you would put the Switch Lite in the dock?
No, why are you saying that? No.
What is happening?
Nobody's talking about the dock.
Am I speaking English? What am I doing wrong?
Wait, hold on. Hold the phone for 1 second. So let's go over this
Andrea,
one more time.
Can I try to explain it?
Sure, Kevin.
I'm lost.
Okay, all right.
Okay.
So
I'm flat forgetting it.
So you make the light...
Right.
Your primary on the Nintendo account, right?
Right.
So now your docked one is a secondary unit.
You're talking about software solution.
Yes.
See, that's what I was missing from what you were explaining
okay.
it. You're talking about literally like making it, activating it as your primary Switch.
Yes.
Correct.
In Nintendo Online Service.
Correct.
Okay.
If my primary Switch
that
can be
that was what was
offline.
Missing from the explanation.
Okay. If my primary Switch can be offline and I can play games... Then I'm going to make it the portable one.
Everyone
if one of these has to be, if one of these has to be connected to the internet, it's going to be the docked one. Matt/Mark, you're not an idiot, obviously, because this is more confusing than I thought it was.
No. Everybody got it in the chat. Everyone. This is an Andrea thing.
Well, somebody's
sure.
driving a van right now full of nuns.
And they're
don't
on
understand.
My side and they didn't get it. It's like, I don't know. Do we know if that will work? If that workaround will
yes.
be successful?
Why wouldn't it work?
I mean, at the worst case scenario, let's say that like you can't easily do that, which I bet you can. But you can easily, then just factory reset them both and then start again.
No, I mean, but like,
then you would lose.
There be some other kind of...
Once. You'd lose your stuff once.
Yeah.
So you back up all your saves.
But you can't... Aren't there certain games you can't back up because they're dumb?
Yeah, okay. You already played 100 hours of fucking Pokemon Let's Go, everybody. We get it. The little rat gets in the ball and you evolve it. Now you're going to
do
it.
Are you going to start playing Pokemon Go?
I'm playing Pokemon Go.
Let's Go.
I had played Let's Go. Granted, it was before I was a Pokemon master like I am now.
Right, that's...
I was catching all these ghost Pokemon.
We'll talk more about
Did you guys know there's ghost Pokemon? Because I was capturing a bunch of them in the park today.
Wow.
Yes, there are ghost Pokemon.
He's purple?
Know. I didn't know.
He's purple.
We talked about the new Alcremie Pokemon in What's Good This Week. Did you know there's a whipped cream Pokemon? It's a thing now, you guys.
I did not know that.
Gigamaxes? Is that what it is?
No.
Gigantamax. That's it.
There it is.
Into a giant cake.
I like
it's kind of weird, but I kind of like
Kevin,
it.
Kevin, his name is Misdreavus. Misdreavus.
Oh.
So if this workaround is effective, you got your problem solved.
Don't worry, Matt/Mark.
But like, why even make that a thing? If the light is designed to be an on-the-go machine, like why do that, Nintendo?
Well, that's why I think it's got to be possible to just switch your primary without resetting them both.
Or how about don't make the light not work if it... can't be connected. Like, that seems so silly.
But Andrea,
I mean, then we're back to PlayStation, right? Where that's how PlayStation works to an extent in terms of, like, you have to, if your primary console, you could turn off and take with you and never connect the internet again and play all your downloaded stuff. But if it was my secondary, non-activated primary PlayStation 4, if I did that, I'd get 15 minutes after my online.
So essentially this is a thing so that they can check your licenses and make sure that...
100%.
Yeah, it's DRM stuff so that I don't... We in the entire office, we don't share one account and just like everybody
so
turns off.
In theory.
Yeah, hear me.
Could you do this and not have your light connected to the Wi-Fi and play games while someone's playing the same game
Yes.
You can do that with PlayStations.
Yes. No, I understand. That's 100% you could.
But I'm asking about the Switch, Andrea.
We don't know, Kevin.
No, you could. I mean, yeah. There's no way for it to know.
Hypothetically.
If your docked current Switch, Switch in a dock is your primary, and you put that into airplane mode, and then you turned on my secondary one, you could play all my games on Wi-Fi, and then I would do that. Then we'd have syncing problems with saves, but other than that, you'd be fine.
But what are you going to do?
I mean, just not care about it. We're going to make $1 million, pretty much. You know what I mean? Let's have it. Yeah, exactly. That's how we'll do it around here. Man, it's a rough and tumble show already, but I'm enjoying it. You know what I mean? Let your hair down, everybody. It's almost Friday. Can you believe we've been working for 2 weeks straight? IGN had more information about the Nintendo Switch stuff. They report Nintendo has said that Switch Lite will be the only new hardware launched this year, squashing rumors of a more powerful Switch Pro device. So I know that was on the tip of everyone's tongue the other day. What's going on with that? Don't worry about it, basically. Doug Bowser saying, don't even sweat it. It's not a big deal. Now, you put the fear of God in me. I just want to make sure that this embargo is up, right?
Yes, they tweeted about it.
Cool, just making sure. Number two, Call of Duty has announced a 2v2 gunfight mode for Modern Warfare. The bullet points read like this. Two teams with two players will face off against each other in a fast-paced firefight. When the round starts, you will have 40 seconds to locate the other team and defeat them. If no one is killed in the first 40 seconds, then a flag will appear at the center of the map. Players will need to run to the flag and defend it for 3 seconds to get a point. If no one can defend the flag within the time limit, then the team with the most health wins. The last team standing gets the point. The first team to 6 points wins the game. You will not need to create a class. All weapon and equipment selection is handled by the game mode. Also, you will not heal after being shot. All players have a set amount of health. The maps played at pre-briefs and shown in the live stream are King, the exterior of a warehouse, Pine, the exterior of a dense forest, and Stack, a desert container yard. On here, because of course, new mode for Call of Duty Modern Warfare, interesting. Also, Andrea and I played it at Judges Week this thing.
We did.
I will tell you, we're going to talk about it on Gamescast, I think, in depth. But top level, I loved this fucking mode.
So fun. I went into it thinking I was going to hate this 2v2, but it was surprisingly strategic and a ton of fun because it was so fast paced. So
yeah, I'm not a Call of Duty player really, period, but especially not multiplayer. And when we were getting there, I was like, ugh, I just don't like multiplayer. But the fact that it was 2v2, it became, and there's set health, and they're like, all right, cool, it's handguns and throwing knives, it's this and that, like they give you weird combinations of rocket launchers, and it was like suddenly I was actually good at this mode because it wasn't more about like mechanics of how to run around and get each other. It's, you know, you start across the map from each other with stuff in front of you. How are you gonna kill this guy? I loved it. It's gonna be a great party mode when we get it. So look, more on that Gamescast, patreon.com/kindoffunny today if you want to watch live, or watch it later with that free and pre and post show, and then free for everybody, youtube.com/kindoffunnygamesfriday. Speaking of things Andrea and I have seen that we'll talk about on Gamescast, but our breaking news as well. Number three, there's two new modes for the Dark Pictures anthology, Man of Medan. Is that what we're saying, or Medan? What are we saying?
She said Man of Medan.
Medan. It's me, Medan. Bandai Namco Entertainment America announced today that players will be able to team up to tackle the horrors of the Dark Pictures anthology, Man of Medan, in both online and offline modes. Of course, this game coming out August 30th, 2019, so right around the corner. The first of these is Shared Story Mode. Share the story simultaneously with a friend in two-player online co-op. Both players explore the world, make choices, and perform actions that affect the outcome of the story and the fate of their respective characters. Traverse scenes through a different perspective from the single-player experience, sometimes together, sometimes apart, in totally separate scenes, revealing new information, location, and scare. Next one is Movie Night Mode. Play locally in a group of up to 5 players with one controller, with each player taking charge of the movement, decisions, and choices of one of the 5 main characters. Players can choose between saving themselves or trying to keep their friends' characters alive. At the end of each playthrough, actions, impacts will be judged with achievements and rewards for each player. Again, Andrea, you, me, and Joey Noel went and climbed on the USS Hornet in Alameda this week to play this game. Went down into like the lower level, weird, scary ass ship. Again, Gamescast will really, really get into it. I didn't know what to make of this. We went there and I was like, okay, this, of course, from the people who made Until Dawn. You know what kind of game it's going to be, narrative decisionally. But to get there and they're like, all right, we have a big reveal. There's multiplayer in this game. And that's what you guys are doing today. Didn't know what to make of it. And then when Joey and I finished our playthrough and sat down and started talking about it, and it was like, wait, did you not see me do this? Oh, that, like,
I was so impressed by what they did.
The conversations you have about this are so cool, let alone then when we went back and watched, we played, that was us doing the online mode, when we did the shared couch stuff, getting to see how other people handle the situation, seeing people, did you see this? Did your ear get cut off? You're like, holy shit, like, it's exactly what you loved about Until Dawn with more people. And you can, of course, play it solo. You can totally play the game solo and not play with anybody else, which I think won't rob you of certain things, but I think this is, for me personally, and we'll talk about it on Gamescast with our real experiences, the one-on-one online thing seems to be the way to do it.
Yeah, of all the modes that we got to see, definitely the two-player online co-op was something I've never seen before in a game, and the way that they utilized the back-and-forth decision-making felt like it flowed really well. And I won't say too much more about it because, you know, we're going to have a nice conversation about it on the Gamescast. But I went in expecting to like this game because I really liked what Supermassive did before and did not get disappointed.
Good.
So,
yeah, really cool modes. And if that wasn't enough, a made-up man, Joe Screbbles from IGN, actually sat down to talk to people who made the game, unlike Andrew and I, who played the game and ran away.
It's true.
He has this information about him. Not about this, but about how many games are in the anthology, because you're like, Dark Pictures Anthology, what a weird title. The Dark Pictures Anthology, which opens with Man of Medan this August, is currently planned for 8 games with a release schedule of 2 per year. Dark Pictures is a multi-game horror anthology created by Until Dawn developer Supermassive Games. Every game in the anthology will be a new story in a new horror genre, with the only major aspect tying them together being the Curator, a mysterious figure cut from the same cloth as Rod Sterling in The Twilight Zone or the Crypt Keeper in Tales from the Crypt. In an interview with Supermassive CEO Pete Samuels, I asked what the plan for the Curator is. Quote, "We have an arc in mind that plays out over 8 games. He's really the only consistency across the anthology. Everything else from a story character perspective, we want to be a surprise." Samuels continued by pointing out that not only the Curator story, but the individual games have also been planned. Quote, "We want to surprise people each time when we announce the second game. When we announce the second game, we want it to be the last thing people expected in terms of theme and subgenre and whatever. And then again, with the third one, we have them mapped out for the first 8. Supermassive has repeatedly pointed out that it sees the Dark Pictures games as being just that, a game sold as an individual product, unlike the likes of Telltale episodic games, which have multiple entries loaded from a single shell program. When I asked how frequently we could expect Dark Pictures games to arrive, Samuel said, quote, "Our aim is to get to a frequency of 2 a year. From concept through to completion, there are a couple of years in development. So, if you do the math, we've obviously got a handful we're working on the studio at the moment," end quote. Each game will have a different game director, different screenwriters, and different actors, not to mention entirely separate dev teams, all of which allows Supermassive to work concurrently on multiple entries in the series.
Interesting.
Awesome. Do it. You know what I mean? I loved Until Dawn. I thought that was such a great breakout. Here's who Supermassive is game. And then since then, I don't think they've struggled, but Rush of Blood, okay. Impatient, I did not like on PlayStation VR. I'm excited to see them get back to horror storytelling and then also have this like Tales from the Crypt idea. That's such a cool thing you don't see in video games of like, cool, I'm the curator. Here's this weird subgenre. Here's this weird thing you're going to get into for a few hours and play multiple times to see things. And then guess what? We'll see you again in half a year, hopefully. Awesome.
Yeah. I am excited to see how the different stories with different dev teams and different directors are going to play out for cohesiveness across the entire anthology.
Sure.
I think having different screenwriters and different actors absolutely makes sense. But getting a different game director for each game for 8 games, ambitious.
I like that though, right? Because it is taking that Twilight Zone, Black Mirror concept of fiction and putting it here, right? When I jump into a Black Mirror, I know what I'm going to get, right? Technology bad. It's gonna fuck us over. Here I know the Dark Pictures Anthology, right? What I'm getting. All right, mm-hmm. Cool. A choice-based game that's horror. I love the idea of that. Yeah, for some reason we're on a battleship in this one, right? But in Man of Medan. But what'll happen in Until Dawn was the teeny bopper. We're up in a cabin in the woods thing. Like, what is the next thing you're going to do that? When do we go to space and how crazy will that be?
And I guess the upside is that the mechanics aren't dramatically changing game to game.
Exactly.
I think they'll be identical and... because I don't want to equate what a game director and a film or TV director does. They are wildly different things. So I think, you know, the idea that the anthology has that through line of like, you'll always know what the mechanics are. It's going to be choices. It's going to be quick time events. Yeah. It's going to be like limited movement in the world. I think that will help keep consistency.
Yeah. It's just an interesting way to get in there and have people tell their stories. And I'm all for it. Kevin, you all for it?
No, I don't play scary games.
Yeah, you don't like scary games, right?
He doesn't know about the yes and, Greg.
No, I knew what he was going to do there. I knew how he was going to shut us down.
I don't play scary games. What do you want me to do?
I want you to start playing scary games. Start
we could do
fun.
It in movie night mode.
Hey.
Oh, Bear can hold your hand. It'll be cute.
No, thank you. I'm good. I know what I like, and that's not what I like.
Don't cry. We didn't mean to put you on the spot, but oh, no. KevDog, no. Number four. Facebook apparently is after AAA VR games. This is Rebecca Valentine at GamesIndustry.biz. Though VR is still growing slowly, one criticism is that it still lacks exclusive entries from popular AAA franchises to draw crowds. That may change soon if Facebook gets its way. The information reports that Facebook is currently after both game studio acquisitions for Oculus development, as well as IP rights to make VR games in popular franchises. Two IPs that sources say are already signed on are Assassin's Creed and Tom Clancy's Splinter Cell, both from Ubisoft. Facebook's CEO Mark Zuckerberg was reportedly involved with the deal, though VP of Special Gaming Initiatives Jason Rubin is in charge of the push for acquisitions and content as a whole. Rubin was promoted in December from his previous role at Oculus Head of Content. Quote, we cannot comment on specific partnerships, but we will continue to focus on expanding our library and reaching broader gaming audiences for years to come, a Facebook spokesperson said. Facebook launched its new untethered Oculus Quest headset at the end of May this year, and in the first 2 weeks, it moved over 5 million in software sales. Because the Oculus Quest is awesome, everybody. Guess what? VR ain't dead. It's here, and it's going to stay. I can't wait, Andrea.
Yeah?
I love that fucking Quest.
The Quest is really cool. It's really good. I think the reason why we probably haven't seen AAA entries, particularly games like Assassin's Creed and Splinter Cell, they are not really suited for a VR adaptation. Now, that being said, I am open to seeing something cool happen in those universes. Yeah. I've really enjoyed some of the original stories that we've seen in VR, and I think that there are some AAA entries on the horizon, particularly with Oculus. I think immediately of Asgard's Wrath,
sure,
and that game and how it's really shaping up to be
Sanzaro Studios. Right?
Exactly. A full-length RPG that you could get on a console, and I think with the way that they're specifically creating it for VR is making it a really unique way of storytelling. It's just hard because you don't necessarily want to take a really well-known character and bring it into VR and then have it fall on its face, yep, and go really badly.
That's the struggle you have with this, right? And I think back to, I remember when PSP did this, when PSP was pretty much dead, and then Destination PlayStation, where they were like, guess what? There's going to be an Assassin's Creed for it. We're doing a MotorStorm for it. They started coming out and be like, no, here are these big things for it. And everybody got really excited. And then we got Assassin's Creed on PSP, and it was like, oh, well, this wasn't really Assassin's Creed. You know what I mean? Like, that's the risk you run here. The hope, of course, right, is that you put out an Assassin's Creed experience. I'm assuming it'll be something like Batman or Batman Arkham VR, or and same thing for Splinter Cell, right, where it's, you know, point to jump around to different things, shoot out lights, whatever. And that can be a cool experience. I'm not saying it wouldn't be, but when people jump in, even if that is like, oh, this wasn't exactly what I wanted out of this, then they get to look at the library of Quest games, Oculus games, and see that, okay, well, there are a number of standouts, right? It's the, you know, normal thing of a rising tide lifts all boats, that if you can get more people in there to play Beat Saber, if you can get somebody in there, I mean, like, you talk about AAA stuff, Kevin and me talk about Vader Immortal, right? It was you and I talked about Vader Immortal, or it was Barrett, but Vader Immortal on Oculus Quest, like, and granted, I know that's a game that's been on other stuff, but for me, I played it on Quest, and it's like, holy shit, this is awesome. I'm talking to Darth Vader. I'm in this Star Wars game doing these things. That is interesting. It is exciting. Those kind of experiences bringing people in, but then getting them to see something like Asgard's Wrath, getting them to see something like Beat Saber. Yeah, that's what it's all about, and getting adoption and getting units into people's hands.
Absolutely.
But Quest has been doing so well. It's the same thing. You know, we're doing a PlayStation VR show today, like I was saying. Today's game is Astrobot Rescue Mission. A fantastic game, right?
So good.
But it's that thing of sitting on the couch playing it. It is that, like, oh, I hate being tethered now, and I hate that it's like tracking isn't per, you know what I mean? Like, because Quest is just so fucking good at it. It just, I can't get over that tech. That's such an impressive piece of hardware.
And I think we're only going to see the tech become more impressive as we get farther into the life cycle. I would love to see a happy medium between what they're doing with the Rift S power-wise and what they're doing with the portability of the Quest. I think that's probably in the next iteration, once the hardware becomes a little bit more advanced and they can push more processing power through a portable unit. But we're getting close. I mean, what they're doing with chips inside mobile phones now is, like,
oh, totally,
pretty cool.
And that's the thing, like, and why it's exciting and why it's awesome to see people still investing in it, is that the fact that it's only going to get better. And the fact that it's moving as fast as it is really impressive. And I don't know if we talk about that or give it enough credit. And I think, you know, the fact that we're doing a season two of PlayStation VR speaks to that to an extent. But when PlayStation VR launched, they were so clear, like, okay, it's going to be experiences. And everybody who bought it seemed to be on board with that. But the fact that we're two Astrobots, the fact that we're two games that I put on and play, are like Blood and Truth. And it's just like, holy shit, like this isn't an experience. This is a game and I'm having a great time. And if I'm playing a VR game and I'm still multiple hours in getting that, holy shit, like I can't believe I'm doing this or moving my head around or, you know, different mechanics and going underwater. It's awesome right now the way people are experimenting and doing stuff with it. And I hope it continues to be supported. So we see what happens. But Andrea?
Yes, Craig.
Who knows if it'll be continued to be supported? That's so far away. If I wanted something more immediate, say what came to the mom and grop shops today, where would I go?
Why, Greg, you would go to the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday.
Yeah. Kevin got so into the he knocked something over there. What happened?
I sure did. My garbage bag.
Your garbage bag. Out today, Tiny Metal. Full Metal Rumble on Switch and PC. Blazing Chrome on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. Eagle Island on Switch, PC, and Mac. Red Hot Vengeance on PC. Skulls of the Shogun Bonafide Edition, Switch. Professor Lupo and His Horrible Pets, Switch. Doodle God Crime City, Switch. Nelly Kudelot, The Foul Feet, Switch. Dead in Vinland, True Viking Edition, Switch. Metalloid Origin, Switch. Way Out, Switch. Vector Wars, Switch. Cyber Delta, Switch. This week in GTA Online, players can earn double rewards across all Rockstar-created and verified stunt races, along with a double boost on salaries for bodyguards and associates. Players also receive a 40% discount on a range of items, including nightclubs and underground facility properties used for hosting Doomsday Heist, the Benefactor Terabyte Mobile Command Unit, and much more. Then, these are all Switch, which I should have paid more attention to. Arcade Archives Ninja Spirit, Desktop Bowling, Laser Kitty Pow Pow. Kevin?
Yes.
I need a trailer for Laser Kitty Pow Pow Forwards.
On it, big man!
Vector Wars, which I think I might have said already. I did. Dang, they got me. And then Ziggurat. Then Dead Cells update the 13th is now live on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and Nintendo Switch. This is the first time, and I know you're all going to say, I've seen it a million times, Greg, you're an idiot. I've ever seen Nintendo Switch abbreviated NSX.
Yeah, somebody wrote that in the other day.
I like that. Because I like PS4, Xbox, XB1, NSX.
I don't like it.
Well,
does it make sense?
Whatever. Just enjoy your life for a change.
Ooh, Laser Kitty Pow Pow.
All right, here we got a trailer for Laser Kitty Pow Pow on Nintendo Switch. Snap. There it is. Cubic Games made this one, apparently. The bigger cat has something to do with it. Here's a guy. He's putting on this thing. He's
got a very retro...
And Laser Kitty Pow Pow.
Art style.
It is,
it's
a giant. It's a laser kitty that's shooting lasers out of its eyes and killing everything. You can be a panda too, apparently. All right. Ask a dumb question, get a dumb answer.
Yeah.
Free DLC for The Messenger is out today. Earth Defense Force 5 deploys today on Steam. New dates for you. Iron Maiden has officially become Iron Fury. This launches on August 15th on PC. This is the one where when I was like Iron Maiden, and like, you missed an R, and I was like, oh, I'm an idiot. New Ark Survival Evolved map, Valguero, coming to consoles July 19th. And then Psychonauts 2 is officially now targeting a 2020 release date. It was announced on Fig. This is via Twinfinite. The post goes, we know it's always disappointing when you have to wait a bit longer, but we also know that you are an amazing, supportive bunch who, just like us, want the game to be as good as possible, so we're hopeful you understand. Heart. 2020.
Did we get this in there?
No, because I glanced at it and didn't see a release date. You can lay it on me. What do you got? That's a new date.
Yeah, so we got a press release from Private Division, the people who are publishing The Outer Worlds and Ancestors. And they announced that V1 Interactive and Private Division are making a game called Disintegration. It's a new sci-fi shooter to be unveiled at Gamescom next month. The studio was co-founded in 2014 by Marcus Leto, a former creative director at Bungie and co-creator of Halo.
Ooh.
And this is a new sci-fi shooter from him. And let's see here. If there's any actual information in this, besides, like, I'm really excited to be working on this.
That's pretty much it, right?
Let's see. No. Oh, wait. Nope. Nothing.
Well, there you go. There's a game coming. Get excited.
Gamescom reveal.
Time for reader mail, but first let me tell you about our sponsor. It's Hims. You've heard us talk about Hims and how they're helping guys look their best, but if you haven't, it's time you see what they're all about. 66% of men start to lose their hair by age 35, and once you start to notice thinning hair, it can be too late. The solution? 4hims.com, a one-stop shop for skincare, hair loss, sexual wellness, and more for men. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Hims is helping guys be the best version of themselves with licensed physicians and FDA-approved products to help treat hair loss. Hims was created by a guy who knows something about men's conversations, and he knows that health conversations are easier online than in person. This means with Hims, no more awkward in-person doctor visits or long pharmacy lines. 4hims connects you with real doctors online, which could save you hours completely confidentially and discreetly. Answer a few quick questions, a doctor will review, and if they determine it's right for you, they can prescribe you medication to treat hair loss that is shipped directly to your door, just like Nick and Andy did. They went to 4hims.com. They got signed up. They're taking gummies to fix their hair. You can order now. My listeners get started with Hims Complete Hair Kit for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last and subject to a doctor's approval. See the website for full details and safety information. This could cost hundreds if you went to a doctor or pharmacy somewhere else. Go to 4hims.com/gamesdaily. That's FORHIMS.com/gamesdaily. 4hims.com/gamesdaily.
Mm-hmm.
We'll start with the nanobiologist. We'll go the order. Nanobiologist writes in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, just like you can. It says, what's good, Greg and Andrea? How does games marketing keep making mistakes with announcements? We've seen time and time again a tweet or listing get posted way too early, possibly messing up many months of hard work. This time around, Final Fantasy VII was accidentally leaked as coming to the Xbox One day and date, parentheses side note, fuck yeah, and a side note. Other times, we see tweets give misinformation or even press showings and demos, not truly show what a game is and entail what the mechanics are wise. So why does this happen, I think is what he means. And how could this be fixed for gaming advertising marketers that are listening?
Well, nanobiologist, I'm glad you wrote in about that because I have some bad news for you. They actually confirmed today that it will, in fact, not be coming day and date to the Xbox One. That was some kind of mistake. From IGN, Final Fantasy VII Remake, Square Enix has, quote, no plans for other platforms other than PS4. So Xbox has no announcement to make regarding a Final Fantasy VII release. So I'm not sure why somebody posted that, but apparently it's fake and not true. Oh, Doesn't mean it's not coming to Xbox eventually, because I think we can assume that
Andrew Renee pretty much said it. Throw your Xbox out the window. It's over. Throw your PC out the window too. It's done.
It will get a PC and Xbox One release eventually. But not yet. It's coming to PS4 though, March 3rd, 2020.
I think the question stands even with that mistake then, right? Of like, you know, how does game marketing keep making mistakes with announcements? I think the problem is that, of course, there are too many moving parts for all of these announcements. I think it's a miracle that anything is kept under wraps. Period.
Especially with a company as large as Square Enix, like, it's important to remember they are a global brand that has branches in North America, in Europe, and in Japan. And each of those teams has their own marketing people, and then they have to prepare marketing materials for several regions around the world within different time zones. And it's a very coordinated effort to get a single announcement to go live at the same time across all time zones. So that's why leaks and things get posted when they're not supposed to, because it's hard, dude.
And all these programs that have like the schedule and tweet button right next to each other, like, you know what I mean? Like, the amount of times I'll set something in, or not much anymore, thank God, but set something on Twitter to publish at a certain time or on YouTube at a certain time, and it's like 15 times verified. That was always, for me, the most terrifying thing about doing a review embargo at IGN, especially when it was midnight. I was like, oh God, is it the right PM, AM? Like, I don't want to fuck this up and publish early. And you're talking in correctly so, because the question's about marketing with like Twitters or materials, but then like get into partners, right? Like get into pre-briefing the media on it, and then they have their articles going, and then they have things that are done. Get it to, we need to have stuff in game stops, right? We need to have a banners there that you hope somebody doesn't take a photo of. That, all right, now we're, you know, shipping the game. I saw Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3 is already on the shelves in Mexico. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's that kind of crap where it's just like there's so many moving parts to all this. The fact that anything is kept a secret ever is insane.
It's super impressive because they're really relying on people to be honest, do their job, and not, you know, do something that's outside the bounds of what they're legally allowed to do.
And everybody's human. Everybody makes mistakes, right? Like, it's funny. two, three, 4 weeks ago now or whatever, we had a question on the show about embargo breaking and this, that, and the other. And we were very much like, oh, man, well, we haven't done it in a while, or, you know, personally, or this, that, in a while, yada, yada. And then, like, the next day I broke an embargo on the show where I was reading a thing and I was like, pretty sure that's embargo. That doesn't seem like, and it wasn't today. And it was like, it was the smallest of news. It wasn't a big deal. It wasn't even in the news. Nobody noticed. Nobody cared. I hit up and apologized profusely to Ubisoft. They didn't care. They understand that you're a human being and you said this thing. Big deal. It wasn't the end of the world by any stretch of the imagination, but I think I'm pretty good at my job. Well, good at that part of the job. And like,
you're good at your job, Greg.
Thank you, Andrea. So are you.
Thanks.
You know what I mean? But everybody makes mistakes and that's how it is. So like,
it's true.
Why, you know, how does game marketing keep making mistakes? Because everybody's a human being and there's no way to not make
a
mistake.
And it's hard. And like, especially in the marketing loop, there's so many people that touch that process along the way. All it takes is one person to be a jerk. Like a guy at a printing shop who knows he's not supposed to be taking photos of people's materials and posting them on the internet because that's private, confidential information, takes a snapshot of something being printed and posts it and then is like, cool, look at this thing I saw. And it's like, yo, dude, don't do that. You're not supposed to do that.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's the really tough part. And so I have a lot of respect for people who have to work in that process. And it's difficult. You know, we talk about how certain outlets are known for leaking stories or getting, you know, off the record or anonymous sources, I should say, and kind of spoiling the surprise for people. There was, you know, there's a big raging debate over whether it's ethical and whether it's not. I know. Yeah. Cory Barlog got into it with Jason Schreier, you know, a while back about saying like, hey, I represent a dev team whose hard work didn't get spoiled. And like, we were so grateful for that. And like, it sucks that sometimes you guys spoil stuff for people when they want to be able to announce it the way that they want to. I think it was around the Call of Duty Modern Warfare leak. Mm-hmm. And so it's tough. So when you ask, how does game marketing keep making mistakes with announcements? I mean, it's hard, man.
It's more how do they don't how do people not make mistakes? Exactly. How do they not open their laptop on the Montreal subway? Ignacio Rojas writes in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames and says, "Hola, amigos. Que tal?" I don't know what that means.
What's up?
Oh, thank you. So,
or what's good?
It's been almost 3 years since we got the initial reveal of Death Stranding, and now that we are 4 months away from launch, we'll see about that. I've got one question. Can you describe what this game actually is? Because I can't.
No.
People are so hyped about this game, me included, and yet we don't actually understand what the game even is. Kojima himself called this game an action game /strand game, whatever that means. What do you think about this? Is Kojima going full Kojima with this game? And is that a good thing? Anyways, keep it being awesome. P.S. Salted popcorn should burn in hell. Caramel popcorn is the only true popcorn.
Okay, Ignacio, I was with you, and now get out.
Who doesn't like salted popcorn? And I understand appreciating.
Ignacio doesn't like it.
I can understand
salted
appreciating
caramel popcorn.
Caramel
dude.
Popcorn. Mm. You're in a movie theater. You want caramel popcorn? This is like saying you want a peanut M&M over a plain M&M. All right,
stop. So now you sound stupid.
Yeah.
Oh, losers being dumb.
No, listen. This is definitely Kojima going full Kojima on this game.
Sure,
100%. Like Death Stranding is going to be weird. It's going to be super artistic. It's going to have a very distinct point of view. Is it going to light the world on fire? That remains to be seen.
You ask, is it Kojima going full Kojima? Yeah, I think it is, and I hope it is, and will that be a hit? Who knows? I don't care. I think it's awesome that he gets to go be as weird as he wants to be. Go make a weird game with all your Hollywood friends. All right, let's see what happens. Let's go. What is this game? I think you pointed out, Ignacio, he said pretty clearly it's a Strand game. I don't know what else we can tell you. You know what the game is. There you
we
go.
We don't know what a Strand game is any more than you know what a Strand game is.
I'll tell you what. I want nothing more than this year at the Game Awards, fucking whoever, to come out and be like, and the award for Strand Game of the Year goes to Death Stranding. You know what I mean? He made his own genre. He can't lose the category. I think it's going to be you walking around, and there's help from people outside of your world that you don't see, but they're doing things in your world that'll help you out, and you're delivering babies, and there's things, but not like delivering like you're a doctor, but like, you know, you're putting them like you're a delivery man. You're an Amazon man. Mm-hmm. This is all against Amazon, and the president's there in a bed.
Greg, I got a question for you.
Sure, land on me.
Do you think that this could potentially backfire on PlayStation and Kojima if it's too weird? If the gameplay loop isn't fun, if the gameplay is obtuse or difficult to understand, but it's incredibly artistic and has a vision, but the gameplay element of it is missing, what do you think will happen?
It depends on what you define and what they define as well as backfiring. I don't I mean, I know that when we all start talking about it, and like when people who are smarter than me start talking about sales figures, they start getting lofty really quick.
Mm-hmm.
I think the game's going to sell really well. And I don't know if it's going to set records and do that. I've never been that kind of pontificator. I think it's going to sell really well. I think that even though I know we joke around about how much we've heard about this game and how long it's been talked about, yada yada, I still think this game's come way quicker if it hits this release date than most of us thought it would. So I think that there isn't this like decade of expectation behind it. I think they've done a really good job of being like, the game looks weird as fuck. What are we getting into? Who knows? Like, I think it's going to. If it, what you just said, the gameplay loop isn't there, it's weird, people aren't, I think it'll be one of those that gets put on the shelf as video games are art. Like, this was him being full of Kojima and being a super weird guy and doing a whole bunch of weird shit, but you played it and it was, you know, what, have they even said, kindoffunny.com/ you're wrong how many hours it is? I watched the trailers, but I do stay on Blackout for the most part.
I don't think anybody's gotten hands on with it.
No, I knew that, but I just didn't know if there's been a comment out there. Because, I mean, what, I think it's going to be between 8 and 20, probably? Like, I don't think it's going to be a giant, you're in this thing like you were with Metal Gear Solid 5. I think it's going to be a, you know, in quotes, short contained experience in terms of games. And I think that's right, because I think if it is that you get in and it's super fucking weird and it's over, it's going to be one of those head scratchers. But then, of course, it's Kojima, so there'll be all these Reddit threads and things, or hot ties in, and is this Metal Gear timeline, and there was this thing and this reference, and like, there'll be enough for people to dissect about it. And if it is, it doesn't live up to either of their expectations in terms of what they wanted it to be, then it isn't an IP they go back to right away, and Kojima Productions goes and does something else instead. I don't see it being a failure. I don't see it being a game that gets fives and sixes, which I'm happy to eat my words. I'm not even doing this as a fan. I don't think it's going to do that. I also don't think it's going to get tens. I think it's going to be in that 7.5 to 8.5 range right there in a healthy chunk, because it will be weird and people will be turned off by that. But then I think it's going to have fans that fucking love it, and then people that are totally put off by it. But it'll be one of those things that, again, with art, right, that's how you want a lot of people. You want strong reactions. You don't. The worst thing was always reviewing a game that you thought was a 5. It's not good. It's not bad. It's just there. It's something I had to play, you know. I expect it to be somewhere in there. I hope I'm wrong. I hope for the whole team it's a 10. I hope everybody loves it. I hope it's gangbuster sales. But I think it's weird enough that it's going to be off-putting to some people, but then it's going to be a lot of people's kind of weird. In the same vein, in terms of weirdness, Control. Where I think I'm surprised Control is getting as much juice behind it as we get closer and closer to it.
Why?
Because Control totally looks like my kind of game, but the way Quantum Break, I thought, was like overlooked and kind of like, eh, whatever. Like, granted, it wasn't an amazing game, but I also look at Control and I'm like, I'm not sure if Control is going to be amazing either. I think it's going to be a lot of fun and I can't wait for it, but I don't know what that's actually going to net out to be.
I don't know like how far we want to go down this Control rabbit hole. I think the reason why Control is different,
have some fun, man,
is because after having played it a couple of times now, the gameplay feels more complete as a concept than some of the stuff that Remedy has done previously. I mean, and not all of their stuff, because obviously they have a quite diverse library of games under their belt. But I think that even though they tend to skew on this like kind of like weird supernatural angle with a lot of their storylines, the gameplay feels pretty grounded. And so I think the marriage between what they're doing with this really cool supernatural storyline and how they're representing that through the mechanics and the gameplay in Control is, so far from what I've seen, very well done.
Yeah. No, I like it. I can't wait for Control. I'm very, very excited for Control. But when you start making a weird game, you're never sure if it's going to be the right kind of weird for people, or if it's going to be, what is that? Why, it's a woman. She got a weird gun that morphs. What's going on? I don't understand what's happening.
Yeah. We'll see. But at least we know what that gameplay looks like.
100%. Yeah.
Who knows what the gameplay of
We
Death
do
Stranding
know. You saw
like.
The 8-minute thing. There's a ladder. Andrea, the president is
no
sick.
No questions anymore. I'm good.
That was a good pregnant pause. 2038 Pokemon CEO is going to close it out today. How do you handle meeting influential people in your industry? Do you have enough experience meeting Troy Baker, lol, Kojima, or Miyamoto that you aren't phased? Or do you still get into their, quote, reality distortion field mode for the meeting? I just remind myself everyone has an alarm clock. Is your relationship with companies different now than when you were reviewers? Do you get to partake in more opportunities such as hosting events, EA Play? Is it harder to get codes? Are there times when the press, IGN, Kotaku, etc., gets more privilege? Are developers more comfortable to talk to you because they aren't you aren't from the traditional press. All right, so two very different questions there.
Yes.
Do you get bugged out talking to Troy Baker?
No.
Fucking
but
clown.
It's Troy. It really depends on the person. No offense, Troy. You're great. We love you. But I would never put Troy Baker and Miyamoto in the same category in the industry because they do very different things, right? Troy is a fantastic actor.
Actor. Okay.
And Miyamoto has been an innovative visionary in video games for decades, right?
He's on the Jimmy Fallon show.
Exactly. I mean, and I think so. They do different things, right? And there are certain moments where I'll get nervous when I'm interviewing somebody or when I'm meeting somebody because we get to talk to people from so many different, walks of the industry that the first thing I always get afraid of is if I'm going to say their name wrong, if I'm going to get their title wrong,
pronunciation, yeah.
If I'm not going to be as up to date as I need to be on the latest project that they're working on, or if they've announced something recently, and because I never want to stumble when I'm meeting somebody,
sure.
Particularly about their professional credentials, because I never want to undercut somebody's accomplishments.
Yeah.
When I'm, you know, interviewing somebody for work. And so I get like a little bit nervous when I meet anybody, regardless of if they're an associate producer or whether they're, you know, the CEO of the company, right?
Sure.
I think everybody has a value and worth in that ecosystem. But when we're talking about, this idea of a reality distortion field, I think that really just, you just have to put your professional hat on and make sure that you're not fanboying or fangirling out too much.
Totally.
And sometimes it's difficult because obviously Greg and I are fans of games and we've been passionate about games for our entire lives. And so you can't always just immediately turn that faucet off when you're around somebody that you really respect and admire. And I think back to the first time I met Jennifer Hale, who's another amazing voice actor. And how I had to interview her during the Mass Effect 3 press tour. And it wasn't until after the interview and we had like shut the camera and the lights off that I plucked up the courage to say, like, I really love your work, and not just in Mass Effect, but all the stuff that you've done. And, you know, I got to have like a moment with her after the interview. And so it's just about knowing when is the right time to maybe have that discussion. And sometimes it's never the right time. Sometimes, you know, it doesn't make sense to have that personal moment with people, particularly if they have a lot of stuff going on or if they have a lot of interviews to do. But
yeah.
I think Greg and I are in a very unique position because we've worked in the industry long enough that we've been able to have discussions with so many people like that.
Yeah.
That it's a really cool part of our job, but we also understand the other coin of remaining professional at all times.
Sure, yeah. Those opportunities to get nerdy or thankful, or have, you know, eventually share your information with them, I think come when they come.
Right.
You can never force it into an interview. You can never force it into a conversation afterwards. And I think, yeah, especially to this question from 2038 Pokemon CEO, like at the top here, I think we've just been around so long now that, yeah, like I think we know most people, right? I don't mean like in a conceited way, but I mean like people on this level, right? Like
right.
It's not weird for me to say hey to Phil Spencer or whatever, or you know, to run into Troy Baker, you know what I mean? To come genuflect at him or hang out with Kojima. But like Kojima, right, being like, you know, Metal Gear, my favorite game, like it was like 3 or 4 meetings before I ever really told him that. I was thinking I did it live when I gave him the Peace Walker painting on an IGN E3. Like that was it, but by then, we were already professional relationship, let alone, I mean, friends or whatever. That was my favorite thing when we went to RTX Sydney 2 years ago, right? And he was there, and the way everybody treated him, because everybody gives him such a wide breath of like, that's Hideo Kojima, like, let him do his thing. And like, he had his own like area in the green room and stuff. And like, people would come up to me and be like, hey, do you think you'd eventually be able to ask him if he could sign this? And I'd be like, oh, sure. And I'd DM him like, hey, can you come out? They want you to sign something. He'd come out and sign it, go away. We took Zelda photos. Like, he's a normal person, but like, people have that reverence and respect for him that they wouldn't do that. But I lost that a long time ago, where I will just easily hug him against his will and make him come over and do things with us. I digress.
You know, not against it.
Not against it. You know what I mean. I'm just a huggy person. And then the second part was, is your relationship with companies different now that you aren't reviewers? Which I guess more applies to me than you, based on your careers mainly being a host.
Right.
Yeah, no. I mean, do you get to partake in more opportunities such as, I mean, like, the biggest thing about it, Pokemon CEOs, I know a lot of people always point now to how different it is with, you know, not being a reviewer or whatever. Remember, for me, that started with Up at Noon. When Up at Noon got going and they started selling Up at Noon, I was moved off of PlayStation reviews, where I was like, cool, now you are a full-time host, so you can be in sales opportunities at IGN, and it isn't a conflict of interest. So it's been the same since then to now, but I would say that for the most part, no, the relationship isn't different. I'm still approached and talked to as press. I'm still interact that way. People still understand that I understand what an embargo is. They still know that if I like the game, I'm going to say I like the game. And if I don't like the game, I'm not going to like the game. Mm-hmm. They know, as we've talked about before, with you brought up EA Play and hosting opportunities like that or Borderlands or whatever, that you are hiring Kind of Funny because you know you're going to get the Kind of Funny voice, which means that I'm not going to come in and listen to what you have to say this and say that and blah, blah, like no, like I'm gonna come in and talk and we're gonna flesh this out together and work to where it needs to be. But if I don't like something about it, when I play the game for review, I'm not gonna be like quiet about it or not tell you that. I'm gonna tell you that I, you know, worked on the Borderlands 3 event. So when my mm-hmm. Borderlands review or whatever you want to call it on Gamescast discussion comes up, that'll be a caveat to it. I hope they don't fuck it up because I really liked what I played.
I know, same. I think Greg and I are in another unique position when it comes to this question as well because of our long history working in traditional games media before we, you know, started our own channels and our own outlets. And that's not usually the case with a lot of people. Generally, they start in one or the other and they stick in that path.
Yeah.
But we do get treated differently by certain publishers.
Sure.
And that's not necessarily... because of the kind of coverage we do, but more so because of the way the law has changed over the last 5 years. I remember when I worked at Machinima is really when, you know, the FCC really started getting involved in what was happening in the digital media space as far as advertisements and sponsorships and disclosures. And since then, in the last 5 years, it's really picked up. I mean, the law keeps changing in the way that publishers interpret the law, particularly international publishers that aren't necessarily beholden to all of the laws, particularly in the United States, or they need to manage laws in multiple countries, have different sets of standards for influencers, YouTubers, Twitch streamers than they have for traditional games press. And a lot of that has to do with the way that traditional press discloses, the way that they accept money from publishers. Some publishers, for example, will offer to pay for flights and hotels to send media people to a specific preview event so that they can get hands-on with a game because they have to control where the builds for the game are. So they can't just send codes out to people. They need to keep it locked down for security reasons. So they have to fly people in to play it at that location. But certain media outlets aren't allowed to accept that travel assistance to go there because it's against their
ethics policy.
Whereas... you know, most influencers or Twitch streamers or YouTubers can't afford to be paying to fly all over the country to see these games, but they still want to cover them. So they will accept travel with the caveat that they disclose that they were sent to the event. And all of the like fine print rules about that has gotten really, really difficult to navigate because each publisher has different rules for how they run their events.
Yeah, yeah. You know, when we talk about PlayStation stuff, right, it's always like, and
they
get off us, FTC.
Like,
this was sent to us, PlayStation provided, but that's, we've talked about that on the show before, yeah. Like how Kind of Funny is in, for PlayStation, the influencer bucket. So we're treated mm-hmm. like that, whereas most other people treat us as press, so we don't have to do those FTC, because
right.
you understand that if we're reviewing a game, we probably got the code early, and that's how it works, but...
yeah.
There are blanket statements and everybody's trying to cover it as the continuing media landscape changes. Andrea?
Yes, Greg.
It's time to squad up.
All right.
This is where one of you writes into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, giving me your name, username, platform of choice, and why you need help in a video game. I read it here. The best friends come and find you, and everybody plays games together. Today, Jonathan needs help on Xbox, and I've recently started dabbling in PC with that great game TurboTax. His Xbox name, ThatGuy1185, all one word. I am an easygoing player who, the join is in the journey, and I work evening nights, so I am up playing in the wee hours of the night into the morning. That's what he says. So if you want to talk to that guy, 1118 in the wee hours of the night into the morning, hit him up. That guy, 1185. What's he play? Nobody fucking knows, but he's on Xbox. Andrea,
yes.
We asked people watching live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames to go to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong and tell us what we screwed up as we screw it up. The final boss fight says, to put a little English on it, is a sports metaphor referring to sports or other play involving a ball means to give the said ball a curve in the air.
Yeah, I mean, I knew. I was just playing.
No, you didn't.
I did.
Don't act like you know things.
Are you kidding?
You didn't know. You didn't
I
know.
I know. So I just thought it'd be funny to look.
You came off like some kid who just fell off the turnip truck, all right?
I thought it would be funny.
The turnip truck.
I thought it'd be funny to sit there and act confused and see how you reacted. And frankly,
Servian
was hilarious.
Says the Switch hardware change may be related to the news that Nintendo is switching manufacturing from China to Taiwan due to tariffs imposed by the U.S. government, rather than being an update. And then it has a Taiwanese news article. Interesting. Ignacio Rojas says you can change the Switch console to your primary, as Greg was describing. Omnivision says, I game share with my brother and do it exactly as Greg stated. Only problem is with certain games like Diablo 3, when you have to log in to even local co-op, which checks second account for a copy of Diablo 3. Otherwise, this works exactly as you stated, Greg. There is a 3-hour grace period on an online check on the secondary. Kebabs writes in and says, daily reminder for the Lego set voting, kindoffunny.com/Lego. We are nearly 900 votes, only 100 more for that sweet deadline extension. Oh, everybody go over to kindoffunny.com/Lego, vote on the Kind of Funny podcast set to be an official Lego thing that Kebabs designed. Spencer says, I missed a new date, and I usually would say no, but here, I'll give it to you. Twitch cut out a bit for me. Missed a new date and out now for the Vita, so don't skip it, folks. Konga Master Go is out July 23rd in North America and July 24th in the EU, but also out today for physical copies on sale at Play Asia. As of this writing, around 300 copies are left on sale. I haven't played Konga Master Go, but I did play Konga Master on the Switch, and it was fun. So if you need something on your Vita, there you go. And that's it. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily. Each and every week, on a variety of platforms, we run you through the nerdy video game news you need to know about. If you like that, be part of the show. Patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. Watch it live. Twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. Watch it later. YouTube.com/kindoffunnygames. Roosterteeth.com. Podcast services around the globe. Of course, you can be part of the show. Patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. But you can also watch exclusive stuff over there, like pre and post shows for the Kind of Funny Games cast, which we're doing this afternoon. You can watch us record the PlayStation VR show this afternoon. Basically, if you like Kind of Funny and you want to support us, there's no end to the content today. Andrea.
Yes, Greg.
Where can people keep up with you?
At What's Good Games, we have a fresh episode every Friday. You can find us at youtube.com/What's Good Games or wherever you listen to Kind of Funny Games Daily on your favorite podcast app.
All right. Until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.